Well, my guest this morning on this special Easter edition of Correspondence Report is ABC cameraman Louis Eraglou. Now, if you're thinking that name sounds a little familiar, you're right. Louis and the Four Corners reporter Linton Besser hit the headlines nearly 2 weeks ago now when it looked as though the two of them would face charges in Malaysia. Louis, welcome to Correspondence Report.
Hello, good to see you again, Elizabeth. How are
you? I'm very glad to see you sitting there opposite me behind the microphone and not languishing in a Malaysian prison, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, I guess that could have been the worst case scenario. And at one stage we were coming to terms with the possibility of various things, and that was the extreme case. And for it to be turned around in a short space of time is incredible.
Yeah. So tell us the story, Louis. What happened to you? How did it unfold?
Well, Linton and I were assigned to with Four Corners to cover what's going on in Malaysia and in particular the people at the top and how it's affecting the country. And so I guess the first port of call is just getting in the country in the first place. And you know that was okay. We entered the country, KL, and we started filming and started gathering material as we did. And in the meantime, Linton had been basically trying to contact Prime Minister Najib's press secretary, etc., all the contacts that he could to try and get an interview with the Prime Minister. And at some stage, we decided that because we weren't getting any progress there, that Linton decided that we just tag along and film one of his prime ministerial events.
And try to get a question in.
Exactly. So, you know, the schedule is out there as part of the media. It's what happens in Australia. It's all open in that respect. So we decided to fly to Sarawak, Kuching, and tag along with one of his visits, you know, one of his media visits. So he was attending a mosque there, and literally we landed, got off the plane, picked up our luggage, got into a taxi, went straight to the mosque, unloaded, got out of the car, set up a tripod quickly where he was going to speak, and waited with the rest of the media. There were two or three other camera crews there and some still photographers. And literally as soon as I stood next to them, the entourage arrived, police motorcycle escorts, and a second later, Prime Minister Najib
was there.
Opens up the car. And he's actually interesting because he's a lot taller than I thought he was. He's actually quite tall. So he came out and we just, you know, the usual wave of media that follows.
We're walking backwards.
Back, exactly. And the camera lens fogged up a bit because usually you have to wait because when you get from air-conditioned car to a hot night in Kuching, it fogs up, so it usually takes a few minutes. I didn't have the luxury of that, so
you're looking through a foggy lens.
Looking for a foggy lens, and it's okay, you know, it's there, and the lights come on, and you know, the usual police guard in front of him. So I was just walking back with that, and by then we'd already tested the microphone so that I could hear Linton's question, and Linton fired off the question. And
about the money that had mysteriously appeared in the Prime Minister's account.
Exactly. That's right. And Prime Minister acknowledged him. I noticed him looking over, and then he kept walking, and then Linton decided to ask him again.
Right.
That's when the police and security decided to ask who he was, who are you, and took him away.
So let me just stop you there, Louis. So the Prime Minister, you noticed, acknowledged Linton when he asked the question the first time. He just looked at him.
Oh, yeah, it was a glance, yeah.
But he obviously didn't answer.
Exactly, yeah. And he kept walking. He walked the whole time. Mm-hmm. And when he heard, I guess, because we've seen the material a few times, when he heard Prime Minister Najib in English and various English questions, I think he acknowledged
right.
Linton for a second and then kept walking as he realised the questions. Actually, I don't know exactly what he was thinking, but he definitely glanced at Linton because no one else asked a question during that time. And then the entourage kept walking, and so did we. And Linton was after the second attempt, carted off And we cooperated. He cooperated.
So how many police or officials?
That's a good question. I didn't get a time to count. I'd say there's probably about 8 around Linton, including the commanding officer at that time. But what happened was Linton got carted off first. They didn't realise that I was with him.
Right. Even though you were standing there with a camera.
Yeah, exactly, standing with a camera. I don't know if it's because of my olive skin or because we'd separated.
They thought you might have been a local.
I don't know. No, I don't know. Exactly. But at some stage, I looked around and I went, okay, this is going to get serious. But I wasn't arrested at the time.
Had you stopped filming at that point?
No. So as he turned around and walked away, I was still capturing that. When I noticed that they were talking to Linton, I noticed in the lens that one of the officers, plainclothes officers, he pointed at me, and I put the camera down then, and he came over and he said, are you with that guy? And I said,
never seen him before.
Which guy? That guy. I said, yes, I'm with that guy. And he said, come with me. So we were together then, and we were questioned just outside the mosque. Prime Minister Najib was inside still. And then we got cut. They said, how did you get here? You know, who are you with? And our fixer stroke translator was with us, and he's a delightful man. And we touched base with our driver that picked us up from the airport half an hour earlier. And we went to the car, and they took our details, they took photos of our passport, asked questions. Then they said, look, okay, you've given us, we cooperated 100%. Mm. We never broke the police line. We never were aggressive.
Was there a police line?
Well, it was nothing. How do I say? There wasn't a clear police line. Mm. Certainly not. It was the police there, and we certainly stood behind them as the rest of the media did. Mm. And you know, that's the protocol, the international so-called protocol with high level arrivals. And so we did all the correct things, and when we never broke any police line. We cooperated, and when we were asked to leave, we cooperated there as well, and never in an aggressive way. And I have to say, the Malaysians weren't physically aggressive to me at all.
Mm.
We were taken to our car, and once they were satisfied with us cooperating and giving our ID and passport information to them, we were asked to leave. So we headed off to the airport,
right,
to get on the next plane.
So they didn't take your passport.
No, not at that stage. So that was the first time. We got to the airport and all the flights were booked.
Mm.
So it would have been a different story. And I don't know how different it would have been once we landed in KL. But we then went to the hotel, and it was on our way to the hotel that they stopped us at the car. From then, we got back into the van, and we were followed, and we were escorted back to the police station. No handcuffs or anything. It was all amicable and civilised. Went to the police station at Kota Sentosa, and went inside. And they once we were inside, one of the officers there said, "Can we just have your passports? We just want to take some information." I said, "We get them back, won't we?" And I don't know if he understood exactly what I was saying. And he said yes, but we never saw them again after that. So, and then we went into the police station, and I said to Linton, "I keep hearing this 186, and it was coming out in English, 186. And we said, 186, what's 186? And then once we went into the room where the officer was basically telling us, you know, what he had to do, he said it was a law that said obstructing a civil servant in the course of their job.
Right. And that, in fact, was the charge that they were going to level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we went, really? And he said, yes. And I knew that there was something in the back of their heads. It was above their pay grade.
Right.
And these were the top level guys there.
Because you must have been wondering, what are they going to charge us
Yes,
with?
Exactly. Yeah. I've done nothing.
What have we done that? Apart from obviously asking that question, which is what really upset them, but
oh, that's right. What have we done? So, I thought this is becoming political, right? So, It was this little sort of, you know, up one level. So the initial arrest, then the re-arrest, and then so it was just slowly
just
in increments.
Up.
Yeah, yeah. Going up. It was slowly escalating. And when he read out that charge, I said, okay, and then talk of statements and printing out a statement and then signing it. I said to Linton, I said, we got to get the ambassador involved. I've been in these situations before, and we need to protect ourselves early if we can. Through DFAT, we were able to find a local lawyer, a highly recommended lawyer, Mr. Albert Tang. We decided that we're going to get some legal help before we signed any statements.
So you bailed, and what do you do? Do you go back to the hotel room?
We go back to the hotel room, and we await for a decision. We were told we had to wait for a decision on Monday that had to come from, I guess, the Attorney General or the local magistrate's court about the decision, about our fate. So, you know, it wasn't an immediate, you know, yes, you could go, whatever. So there was a day or two of thinking and pondering. And by then, I guess the message had got out about us, especially when it was escalating. And Sydney decided to send a crew out of Jakarta.
Adam Harvey, I think it was.
Adam Harvey. Mm-hmm. And first time I've met and worked with him, and he's a delightful man.
So I wanted to ask you, Louis, during that time at the police station, there were a couple of moments when Linton was actually speaking to the camera, and the Four Corners have used this in the promotional material. Were you filming that?
Yes, I was. Yeah, and that was on an iPhone.
Did they know you were filming that?
They worked out that we'll take us the photos later, and they kindly asked myself and another colleague to delete those photos.
But they weren't aware you'd actually.
Yeah, I guess they deleted the photos, video. But they didn't delete the video.
Yeah, that was lucky.
Well, that's just one of those things, you know. And after a night blues, if they deleted the video, I would have asked if they asked me to delete, I would have done so. But I think it's important to have some sort of
record.
Evidence and record of you know of what happened.
So even when you were there in the police station, in the back of your mind, you were thinking, "How, as a cameraman, how can I record this?"
And the other thing, exactly, he hit the nail on the head there. Actually, is if you do record it and it upsets them, then it takes it to another level. So there's two things. So you're a bit torn. In other words, so you record it and you've got this evidence, but they could, you know, take it and whatnot, or you don't and you cooperate and maybe you'll be free to leave. Maybe you won't. But I guess it was the first. This has happened to me before. Being arrested, it comes with a job, and I accept it. And I'm pretty clear headed about the whole thing. And
well, how does this rank though in terms of
previous?
You know, yeah, and how you were feeling as it was unfolding.
Do you know what? I go back to Iran with Tim Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2003, and we were covering a World Cup qualifier, Iran versus Ireland, of all things, in Tehran. And at the end of that, there was celebrations in the street. The celebrations turned into anti-government demonstrations, and I've never seen that before. No one's seen that before in Tehran. And we filmed it, but we were, how do I say this, we were pulled aside into a van and taken back to the police station. And Tim came later. He was arrested as well. And, yeah, we were detained there. They took all our material. I mean, I reluctantly gave it up, but I think the words were, you know, if you don't hand that over, first we'll break the camera, then we'll break you.
Right.
So, but that what saved us there was the ambassador.
Right.
And you know, and so I went, okay. So when it gets to that level, you know, high level, and you don't want to, and people don't want to create a major diplomatic incident, then you can nip it in the bud. So that one got nipped, thankfully, by the ambassador. We thank the ambassador, the Australian ambassador to Tehran, to this day. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But there was far, far more worse than this.
Okay, and why was it worse? What?
Well, because there was I'll never forget this. I was in the cell with myself.
Oh, you actually got thrown into a cell?
Yeah, at a police station.
Because that didn't happen in Malaysia, did it?
No, that did not.
Okay.
And it was quite civilised, like you were saying. But that one turned a bit nasty when we had sort of like tears in our eyes coming out. And I said, what's going on? And what happened was next door, they'd, I think they threw a tear gas canister into one of the cells, and that sort of, with one of the, someone that they arrested, someone else, and that started to leak into our.
Oh, goodness.
So anyway, so we think we got it bad, and yeah, so someone else had it far worse. Look, at the end of the day, with all these things that happen, we have the luxury to leave.
If it goes well.
But there are people there that, without getting too much into politics and showing my political views, whatever, there are people there that are stuck.
They can't leave.
That's very true. Yeah, and you're there for the rest of your life.
But was there a moment when you were in that Malaysian police station, I mean, did you start to think, oh, you know, this could go really badly?
Yes. And I guess the lawyer was saying, look, I mean, it's the first time he'd covered a 186 case. So it's all new territory for everybody. But I can't speak for Linton, but for me, I always expect the worst case scenario. And then whatever's after that is a bonus. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to prepare myself mentally for, you know, and how strong you are or not when that happens. I don't know, but I was actually clear-headed and I was at peace with the potential for that to happen because, look, like I said, it's nothing sinister, nothing aggressive, and if it did happen, then I've got to cop that one. But I knew, and I stay solid about this, that I've done nothing wrong.
But sometimes that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter, yeah. In places or regimes or whatever... out there that want to, you know, deal with people a certain way, it doesn't matter. Yeah, and so the news came in late in the evening, that we had to front court the next day and that we would have to decide whether we wanted to plead guilty or not.
But you never actually ended up in court, did
Well,
you?
What happened was, so Albert and myself, Linton, Adam Harvey, Gordon... Chico the cameraman, we're all in the room and we were basically having a conference call with Sydney and Albert basically told us the news about, you know, we had to plead guilty or not. And so we had a strategy for, you know, what may or may not happen and we left it at that. So that was a late night and Linton went back to his room. Adam went back to his room too because Adam had been filing. Linton was sort of getting his head around what was happening. And I went back into my room just to do a lot of data wrangling, you know, just backing things up and just checking the equipment and whatnot, just in case we had to keep filming. And I was up at 1 a.m, but I was in Linton's room because he had the bigger room. He had the correspondence suite, typical. And so I was in his room. So there was a phone call at 1 a.m, and I picked up and he said, Linton. I said, no, it's Louis, the other L. And he said, it's Albert. I'm downstairs. I said, oh, you've come back. And he said, yeah. He said, can you let me in? Because you could only let him in. So I went down, picked up Albert, and I knew from looking at Albert
that was good
and
news.
Gordon from the body language, I went, it's good news. And he tapped my shoulder and I said, wow. He said, but I'm not going to tell you anything yet. Go get Linton. So I put him into my room. I said, just wait here. Knocked on the Linton's door. Linton, you got to get up. You got to get up. And he said, what? I said, you got to get up, mate. You got to get up. You have to come to my room. And he got up and, you know, it is, nighttime attire. And so I said, look, go to my room, but I think it's good news. But Albert's there. And he said, why? And I said, just go in there. I've got to go get Adam. So I had to go back downstairs and go back up and again, Adam, what? Actually, Adam took a few goes, but he did get up. God love you. And I said, I think you better come to our room because we got some news. So, we all went to the room and rang up Sydney. And Albert said, looks like charges are dropped. All we have to do is go to touch base with that prison, with the police station again, Kota Sentosa. And sign our release forms, I guess, and whatnot, and return our bail papers. So we were amicably escorted to the airport, got on a plane, and went straight to Singapore.
Louis Eraglou, thank you so much for joining us and telling us of what happened to you. It's just terrific that the story has such a happy ending.
Thanks for having me, Elizabeth, and it's good to see your smiley face once again.